The difference in intelligence between men and women is between 2 and 4 points. So it's not that high. I suspect that it's more likely that men are basically higher in autistic traits. And so they just like learning lots and lots of things and knowing how the world works. The suggestion of myself and my colleague is that an element of intelligence involves the ability to suppress instinct. So what intelligence is the ability to solve cognitive problems. And you will be better able to solve cognitive problems if you are, in a sense, low in instinct, if you are able to put aside what would be the instinctive answer and carefully reason out the answer. And it would potentially follow that people that were higher in intelligence would basically be low in instinct. That as you become higher in intelligence, you will be, in a sense, less instinctive. Isaac Newton wasn't in the normal intelligence range. He had outlier high intelligence, extremely high intelligence. And as people become more intelligent, then higher in what's called general intelligence, then we have different kinds of intelligence. You have, let's say, to simplify it, linguistic intelligence, mathematical intelligence, and spatial intelligence. And these all intercorrelate such that underneath them you have something that we can call general intelligence. And beneath those three kinds of intelligence, you have even narrower kinds of intelligence, like the ability to count backwards or the ability to tie your shoelaces or something like that. And as we become more and more intelligent, it seems that the positive manifold between the different elements of intelligence becomes weaker and weaker and weaker, such that people that are extremely mathematically intelligent, like Sir Isaac Newton, can be very unintelligent when it comes to certain things that a person in the normal intelligence range would have no problem with. So Sir Isaac Newton had no social skills. He would just get lost in thought on the stairs, even when he had guests at a party in the next room. He would forget to eat. You know, these basic things that even a child of reasonable intelligence could do, he was incapable of, because that was the negative side, the diminishing return of him having extremely high intelligence indeed. A second dimension to it is that if intelligence is defined as the ability to solve cognitive problems and how quickly you can solve them, well, you can solve them more quickly if you can take in more information. The more information you can take in, the more you can solve the problem. And there is evidence that at very high levels of intelligence, therefore, people who are very, very highly intelligent basically have elements of autism. And that was, I think, certainly true of Sir Isaac Newton. So he would be extremely sensitive to stimuli because he would take in so much information. Autism is about being systematic and whatever. And the opposite of that is empathy. And he was very, very low in empathy. So that's what you get among these people that have outlier high intelligence. They're not very nice people. They're not very easy people to live with. And they're not very practical people. But they are able to achieve some quite brilliant things. Another aspect of autism that you see with Sir Isaac Newton is obsessions. This is another aspect of autism. If you become obsessed with something, obsessed with making sense of something, then you're more likely to solve the problem and make sense of it. And he was utterly obsessed with the Bible and with finding codes in the Bible, and obsessed with alchemy as well. So they have unusual interests like autistic people because they have this very high intelligence. There's two dimensions that we have to think about as to how we are undermining genius. So firstly, there is a weak negative association between intelligence and having children. So the result of that is that if geniuses are defined as those that have outlier high IQ or and make major innovations, then as our IQ declines, which it is declining by about 1.6 points per decade, then we will have fewer per capita major innovations. But the genius is not just a person that has high intelligence. The genius is also a specific psychological type. As I look at myself and Bruce Charlton look at in The Genius Famine, they tend to combine outlier high IQ, with all that implies, with moderately low agreeableness, and moderately low agreeableness means altruism and empathy, and moderately low conscientiousness, which is impulse control and rule following. Now, the normal run of the mill academic, the sort of incrementalist that doesn't make any major breakthroughs or anything like that, the normal run of the mill academic, that person will combine normal range high intelligence, so let's say an IQ of 130, something like that, with high conscientiousness, which is associated with doing well in the education system and doing well in employment, and high agreeableness, which is again associated with doing well in the education system, doing well in the world of employment. The person that is the genius is a bit different. The genius combines outlier high intelligence, so very, very high intelligence, with those traits are feminine traits that I just mentioned. Women are higher in conscientiousness and agreeableness than men, but the genius is outlier high intelligence with moderately low conscientiousness and moderately low agreeableness. And that means having low conscientiousness, he doesn't bother with the rules, and he's not rule bound in his mind, and he'll think outside the box, and he'll be better, more intuitive, and better able to make original connections, which is what coming up with a new idea is about. And being low in agreeableness, new ideas always offend against vested interests, but they always rock the boat and can really upset people. But being low in altruism, he won't care that he upsets people. Indeed, he might quite enjoy upsetting people. Or being low in empathy, he'll be a bit autistic, so he won't be able to anticipate that he'll upset people, even if he did care. And so it's this intelligence personality profile that is the essence of genius. And so under conditions of harsh group selection, which we had until the Industrial Revolution, you were selecting in favor of geniuses, because the groups that were tolerant of geniuses, producing a small optimum number of these group selected genius people, who often wouldn't have children themselves, they wouldn't breed, they were asocial weirdos like Sir Isaac Newton, but they came up with brilliant ideas that ultimately could be used to benefit the group of which they were a part. And that seems to be the evolutionary function of geniuses. And the group that was optimally tolerant of them was the group that would dominate others in warfare under group selection pressures and dominate them, and that was that. Now, with the collapse of group selection, we have the collapse of a system that is based around your group competing and wanting your group to win. And a system based around group-oriented values of what is the good of the group. And there is a degree to which people understood, perhaps, that these geniuses and tolerating them is for the good of the group. To a change in values that's happened particularly since the 60s, that everything is about what is good for the individual. Female values in many ways, harm avoidance and equality and everyone getting on together. In contrast, these more male values of, you know, wanting to know the truth and who bugger it, who cares if it offends people. What's important is it's the truth. And we need to know the truth because we're in a group war here, and we need to know the truth so that we can produce better weapons or whatever it happens to be. And so that means that the culture changes to a movement towards things that geniuses are bad at. Geniuses are bad at, you know, these things like equality. They'll question them and think, well, what's that all about? You know, the geniuses are kind of high testosterone males plus very high intelligence. That's kind of what a genius is. It's kind of like the psychology of a criminal plus very high intelligence. And what's increasingly happening is the universities become dominated by these dogmas that everything is about equality and harm avoidance and not offending people, is that excludes geniuses, because geniuses are rubbish at that kind of thing. Geniuses can't deal with that. And so if you're in a job interview situation, who are you going to employ? The girl, the head girl type, who's, you know, high in intelligence and high in conscientiousness and high in agreeableness and hardworking and comes across as a great colleague in the interview, or just some high IQ weirdo, who are you going to realistically employ? Well, obviously, you're going to employ the head girl. And so that's what's been happening. And so and that's been particularly promoted by sexual equality measures and promoted by a general desire that what's much more important than the truth, much more important than making sense of the world, is equality and harm avoidance, until the whole culture of the university has now changed such that it fetishizes these individualistic values of equality and harm avoidance. And this drives geniuses out in the sense that they'll be unlikely to get the job against the pretty head girl type. And also because the genius, being a bit autistic and whatever, obsessed with truth, will be less able to cope with these speech codes and all this stuff. And so he'll be more likely to get sacked like Noah Kahle, or get you know, for example, Nathan Coffers recently had a lecturer's tour in Korea cancelled, you know, otherwise excluded from academia. And so increasingly, the academia is changing to a kind of a new, to being dominated by a new religion. But whereas that religion was once the religion, or a group-oriented religion, and it was tolerant of genius a little bit, but there was an extent to which the geniuses had to be careful what they said about religion, you know, and Isaac Newton was in that situation. He had to be careful to doubt the group-oriented values. They've now been driven out. There was a period where the group-oriented religion was falling and the individualistic-oriented religion was rising, and that was a period of freedom at universities where these geniuses were kind of broadly tolerated. And that seems to have now closed. We have a new religion of individualism that's taken over universities, and so these geniuses are removed from the system, and so therefore they are less likely to find their safe space, which is what university was, and less likely to reach their full potential. So that's why I think the current system is damaging to genius. This was noted. Oxford University, in at the turn of the 20th century, allowed in women students. And they then reversed their policy. And they said that no more than one in seven of students that come in should be women. And the reason they did was because they said that it prevents us from having rational and logical debates. Because when we try to have these debates with these women, they take it personally, and they, if we criticize them, and they don't like academic disputations, and they get upset and whatever. And so the pursuit of truth is amoral. The pursuit of truth doesn't involve taking into account people's feelings. The pursuit of truth is a ruthless, systematic quest for truth that doesn't involve empathy at all. And that's perfectly fine for men, because the extreme male brain, as Simon Baron Cohen summarized it, is very high in empathy, very high in systematizing, and very low in empathy. And so that's fine. Once you bring females into the environment, you have two problems. First of all, women tend to be lower in systematizing and higher in empathy. So in a sense, they are just, on average, you know, of course, there are exceptions, but on average, they're going to be less logical than men, all else controlled for. They're going to be higher in empathy, higher in agreeableness. They're going to be more rule following. They're going to be more, they're going to be less, their intelligence is more bunched. So fewer of them have outlier high intelligence. They're going to be more rule following, more agreeable. So what they're going to be more focused on is everyone getting on, everyone being happy, everyone being content, everyone being equal, everyone not being offended, everyone feeling validated. They're going to, that will be more important than the cut and thrust quest for the truth. And so it's going to change the culture of the universities. And what's his name? Talal, I always forget his name, this researcher from Lebanon. And he's demonstrated that only a tiny minority of a few percent can start to change the culture of an organization if they are vociferous and push for their own interests. And the second thing is, it's an evolutionary mismatch anyway, because men and women in evolutionary terms aren't supposed to work together. And so what you get if men and women work together is the men seeing the women not as colleagues, but as a potential sexual opportunity, and treating them as such, and promoting them as such. So you'll get cases of, you know, a pretty girl who are up against a genius, male genius. Well, who's going to get the job if it's men doing the appointing? Or the opposite could happen. You could get an ugly, frumpy, but highly intelligent woman up against a you know, really good-looking guy, and it's women doing the appointing, and who are they going to appoint? And so it messes up the entire system. It creates an evolutionary mismatch. And so on every level, I think it's been damaging to the universities to have the introduction of women. And it's not just, I mean, it's a shame, because there are, of course, some women who are extremely intelligent and make important contributions to academia, but we have to, and I'm sure those women that are like that would appreciate this, we have to look at it from the outside, purely from the outside, purely objectively, and think, what is it that aids genius? And what is it that aids genius as a society is that we have this optimum balance between group-oriented values and individual-oriented values, such that we have a belief in freedom of intellectual discovery, and it aids these geniuses if there is a safe space. It doesn't have to be university. It could be, in Victorian times, of course, you'd have the scholar rector or the gentleman scientist like Charles Darwin, or even the Aberdeenshire shoemaker Thomas Edward, who collected mollusks and was given a grant by the Crown to research mollusks. But the university has functioned for a period of, I don't know, 100 years maybe, while Christianity was in decline and multiculturalism was rising. as being not too individualist, not too group oriented. So you roughly had free speech and you could research what you wanted. Go back earlier and you had big problems at universities with people questioning the religious system. So it's not like this hasn't happened before. Empathy is the opposite of being autistic. We conceive of a scale with the extreme male brain at one end, which is high in systematizing and low in empathy, and the extreme female brain at the other end, which is very high in empathy, but which is system blind. And if you are high in empathy, then you are very, very interested in, you are in the external signals of internal states. That's what empathy is about, finding the external signals of internal states. And it's not much of a step from that to what you might call hyper empathy, which is that you over detect signals of internal states. And indeed, you transpose that interest in looking for external signals of internal states into the world itself. So it seems like the world has a mind. The world is showing you evidence of internal states. So you are detecting agency in the world. You have a hyper agency detection mechanism, as it's been called. Women have been evolved because they are that we have a division of labor in evolutionary terms, whereby the man does the hunting and the killing and the fighting, and the women look after the children. And they're the nurturers. They're going to be better at being nurturers if they are high in empathy. And as we just discussed, if they are high in empathy, they are more likely to be religious. And so that would be the first reason why. And this is true even among men. So men that score higher in empathy are more religious than men, even if you control for sex, who score lower in it. So that's the first reason that women are higher in empathy. The second reason is probably a specific kind of selection. So men are more are strategists. They can just, you know, their strategy can be to have sex with as many people as they possibly can. They lose nothing from the sexual encounter. Just have as much sex as they can with as many fit, you know, beautiful young women as they can, genetically fit women as they can, and hope some offspring survive. The women can't operate like that. The woman, because she can get pregnant, she has something to lose from the sexual encounter. So this makes her picky. So therefore, she sexually selects to a greater extent than the man will for socioeconomic status or the ability to in the future attain socioeconomic status. And in particular, she wants evidence of investment. She is more likely to survive, and her offspring are more likely to survive if the man invests in the female and invests in the offspring. So therefore, the man does that. Now, that being the case, the man wants evidence that it is his offspring. And therefore, he wants to control the sexuality of the female. And therefore, you have the development of patriarchy, whereby the female's sexuality is controlled. Now, it's highly adaptive for the group to have patriarchy, because if you have patriarchy, then you don't have these men engaging in intra-group conflict all the time, fighting each other jealously over females, because they know that their women are controlled, they don't have to be jealous, they can work together. And we know that the group level, the group that is higher in positive ethnocentrism, that is internal cooperation, is more likely to beat the other group, all else being equal. So therefore, having patriarchy promotes positive ethnocentrism. So therefore, the group that is patriarchal will be selected for. Now, we know that the religion of the religiousness, we know that's being selected for. It's associated, it's found in all cultures, it's associated with genetic health, it's associated with mental health, it's associated with physical health, it's associated with fertility. There's parts of the brain, specific parts of the brain that are associated with it, and so on. That's under selection as well. And therefore, it makes sense that if that is good for the group to be religious, because it promotes positive and negative ethnocentrism as the will of God as well. And so if that's under selection, then the patriarchy will be under selection, and the religiousness starts to promote the patriarchy as the will of God. So patriarchy becomes interlinked with anything basically that's adaptive, becomes interlinked with the religion. Because the more likely you are more likely to follow it if you believe that God is telling you to. And so that everything adaptive becomes interlinked with the religion. One of those things is patriarchy. So therefore, when a man is selecting who he wants to marry, if a woman is religious, she will be patriarchal. And if she is patriarchal, then he can trust that it will be his genes that will be passed on. So he will therefore sexually select for religious women. And therefore, non-religious women will be selected out. And therefore, women will gradually, in a sort of arms race, become more religious than men. And so that's another reason. So I think you've got two reasons behind it. One is that they're higher in empathy, and the other is that they are higher in being selected for traditional religiousness and patriarchy. Now, once that traditional religiousness breaks down, as it now has, then, of course, women are just higher in empathy and easier to brainwash. And so they can be inculcated with the new, you know, religion of multiculturalism, which is sort of anti-patriarchal and bad for the genetic interests. But under normal conditions, they will be pushed towards being patriarchal, because the women that don't display that they're patriarchal and don't kind of force themselves to believe that they're patriarchal, those women will be selected out. Men are more competitive. You know, they like status. They're status-driven. They're higher in testosterone. Richard Lynn did a Target article in the Mankind Quarterly a few years ago on why it is that you still get these differences in status between men and women. And I argued that, well, part of it is, of course, that men have more people that have outlier high intelligence. Part of it is that men are slightly more intelligent. But a big part of it is just the difference in personality between men and women, that even if a woman and a man have equal intelligence, the man has more drive. He has more of a desire to seek status. He has more of a desire to fight. He has more of a desire to get to the top. And so I think that, and obviously publishing books or anything like that is a way of status seeking and of reaching the top in a particular hierarchy. And that is what men are supposed to do. Women also compete in hierarchies, but their hierarchies, female hierarchies, are of a very different kind. And getting to the top is not necessarily about achieving things, but it's about getting on with everybody so that everybody trusts you and everybody likes you. And you control people in a much more sort of soft power, subtle kind of way. Normally, we are attracted to people that have low mutational load. If they have low mutational load, then that means they will be able to maintain a symmetrical phenotype in the face of disease, and therefore we will find them attractive. If they are a male, they will be able to produce an optimum level of testosterone in the face of disease because they won't have high mutational load, and so we find them attractive. If they're a female, optimum level of estrogen, whatever. And so if you have low mutation, high mutational load, you'll be physically ugly. If you have high mutational load of the body, you will sure as damn it have high mutational load of the mind, because the mind is 84% of the genome. And so this means that if you have high mutational load of the mind, your mind will work less well, it will be slower, and you will be less intelligent. And as a result, there will be a weak correlation between having mutational load, in the sense of being physically ugly, having an unattractive face, and having low IQ. And there is indeed evidence that exists. There is a weak correlation between being good looking and being intelligent. A second reason for it would be sexual selection. So people will tend in history, to sexually select, particularly for looks, for people that are good looking, and they will tend to also sexually select for people that are of high status. High status will be predicted by high intelligence. So the two will become pleiotypically related. And so therefore being good looking will be associated with intelligence. And socioeconomic status has been found across time between the medieval era and the modern day to be about 0.7 heritable. And so you would expect there to be a relationship between being good looking and socioeconomic status, not intelligence, a weak relationship. And this does appear to exist. So I think that's what's behind it. And also, I mean, going back to mutational load of the brain, you would expect if the brain develops suboptimally along suboptimal pathways, then those pathways will be reflected in all elements of the body if you develop suboptimally, including in the face. And this is why there is a weak association, for example, between having a narrow face and having high IQ, very weak association. Why is that? Well, if you look at people that have very low IQ, people that have Down syndrome, for example, they tend to have a wide face. So you can see that if something goes wrong, the face seems to, with the brain, the face seems to get wider. So you would expect that in a very small way to be the case within the normal intelligence range. And there is research from China indicating that is so. If testosterone levels continue to decline, then no man will be able to have children via normal means. So that's very bad. Secondly, we've already discussed that genius seems to be high intelligence plus testosterone. So if testosterone levels are declining, then genius is going to be declining. And thirdly, what are the corollaries of this? What's causing it? I suspect partly what's causing it is going to be poor health, perhaps poor genetic health. So that's an underlying thing we should be concerned about. Also, perhaps what's causing it is the extreme evolutionary mismatch for so many men, that there's this new kind of evolutionary crucible of wokeness, which tells you that maleness is toxic and tells you that it's okay to be a person of a different, it's bad to be a man and you should think about changing sex and whatever, and what this is doing to young minds. So I think that the fall in testosterone, which seems to be very, very dramatic, is a reflection of all kinds of bad things. And so we should be concerned about it.